Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're on for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness show with great Paul Gunter. Paul is going to be with us to talk about nuclear power, weapons, Fukushima, uranium mining, all that great stuff. Paul is a stalwart of the wonderful organization Beyond Nuclear. He and I were arrested together at the Seabrook nuclear plant in 1989, and Paul makes frequent appearances now on Tom Hartman and other radio shows about nuclear power and the situation there. We have news from Fukushima. The New York Times has reported that there is a new leak at Fukushima. What a surprise, that one. And that still more radiation is leaking there. They don't know where it's coming from. They don't know where the radioactive cores are. They don't know what's going to happen to the fuel rods flying in the air. They don't know about the 300 tons of radioactive material floating into the ocean every day at Fukushima. There's just so much they don't know. And when Paul calls in, we will talk to him about it in great length. I have also reported that there is a major case going on. I've posted a blog about it at nukefree.org, and it continues to get signatures at a LinkedIn petition at moveon.org. We've got about 3,600 signatures already on this petition, and it has to do with sailors from the USS Ronald Reagan. The Ronald Reagan is a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. It was called to duty to help people, refugees, victims, really, in the immediate wake of the earthquake and tsunami that rocked Japan on March 11th, 2011. We have indication, evidence is really what it would qualify for, from Nato Kan. Nato Kan was the prime minister of Japan at the time of the meltdown at Fukushima, and he says that the utility company, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, actually did not tell him that the nuclear plant had melted down, and they also did not tell the United States military. And the military ordered in the Reagan with sailors on it, 5,500 sailors on the USS Ronald Reagan, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. There were other American ships in the vicinity that were ordered in to deal with humanitarian efforts to help people in the wake of the earthquake and tsunami. And they were not told about the meltdown at Fukushima. As a result, the sailors on the Reagan were dosed in radiation, and we don't know how much. It's now almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years March 11th that these sailors were exposed to this radiation. And they're claiming have come forward with very, very devastating information about their state of health as a result of their exposure to radiation at Fukushima. We've had a number of them say that their health has actually been absolutely destroyed, that they are suffering thyroid problems, reproductive inabilities. One, I saw a piece that I've posted the link at www.nukefree.org. of a sailor who is has a desk job in the D.C., Washington, D.C. area, the capital area, who was extremely athletic and who has since been confined to a wheelchair. So these and his life has been destroyed, basically. We have a woman testifying that she was on the deck of the Reagan. It was very cold. It was in the middle of a snowstorm. And she noticed, as did other sailors at the time, that there was a wave of hot air that came through and that affected the sailors there. Do we have connection with Paul? Hello? There is has a lawsuit been filed in the federal courts now that indicate that the sailors are attempting to get compensation for their problems, and they so far are going nowhere with it, any of it. Hello.
Hello, this is Paul Gunter.
Paul, I've been okay. You're with us.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I've been on listening.
Oh, good. Well, listen. You need to jump in, and I know that you're familiar with the lawsuit, the USS Reagan lawsuit, and
yes.
Your organization, Beyond Nuclear, has been involved. Have you heard other details about the lawsuit of the Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, I think one of the important updates on the lawsuit is that we now have a legislative bill in the U.S. House and Senate. Lawmakers have included a law in the omnibus bill that would require the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, Dr. Jonathan Woodson, to open an investigation of the U.S. Navy into basically addressing some of the claims by these 71 plaintiffs who have said that, first of all, the Tokyo Electric Power Company essentially misinformed the U.S. Navy, the public, on the situation at Fukushima Daiichi in those early days. We're hearing that the U.S. Ronald Reagan may have come as close to 2 miles into the sea just off the shore of Fukushima Daiichi. One of the plaintiffs has said that they could see land there on March 12th when they went into to perform humanitarian operations, but we're speculating that they might as well been there to try to lay power line to put electricity back into those crippled plants in some desperate effort to forestall the meltdown. But of course, the meltdown was already occurring by that time and flooded with salt water, so there was no way to make any connections. Even with the power supply from the USS Ronald Reagan. But as you say, you know, there was this massive operation on deck with helicopters and aircraft there involved. And suddenly all the crew that was on topside had this metal taste in their mouth, which of course, we know is familiar from those folks at Three Mile Island in 1979, as well as the bomber crews over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, who could taste a metallic taste, likely iodine-131. Right now, so we have, you know, Congress asking questions into whether or not the Japanese and Tokyo Electric Power Company withheld information as we sent U.S. personnel into harm's way.
Yes, and the question, a number of questions arise. First of all, I don't want to let this go by. You mentioned something about laying power lines into Fukushima to help with the situation there. Do you have any evidence of that? Has anyone testified?
No, we don't have any. I mean, but I'm not sure what other reason there would be to get so close as reported by some of these Navy personnel. So, I mean, we're speculating, I'll admit that. But again, there was the USS Ronald Reagan came very, very close. And this has not made any news. In fact, what's been officially reported is that the USS Ronald Reagan, stayed out 80, 90 miles. And then when they began to detect radiation, they moved back. But again, the information curve falls consistently behind the what's actually happened, and so there are this would have been a Department of Defense action. Certainly, there were the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was actively engaged in trying to mitigate this situation. We heard early reports that batteries were being flown in, but of course that never materialized as the power failure, the station blackout resulted in those explosions
and
a melt and three meltdowns.
Yes, a triple meltdown, of course, and four explosions in an industry that said that a nuclear reactor could never explode. But, Paul, we're talking with Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear. You're welcome to call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Paul has been speaking quite a bit about Fukushima. You mentioned flying in batteries. Those batteries would have been backup batteries to try and restore power to Fukushima, to somehow get more coolant into the system. That never really happened. The geniuses who built Fukushima, who were told by tens of thousands of people marching against that plant, and I was one of them in Japan in the mid-70s, they were warned repeatedly that an earthquake and a tsunami could destroy this ridiculously situated and poorly conceived nuclear power complex. But the batteries never came, and one of the key assertions that's come out of this, Paul, is that Nato Khan, who was prime minister at the time, has been very clear in saying that it was the earthquake that caused the meltdown, at least at Unit 1, and that the tsunami, of course, complicated matters and made things much worse, but that the reactor would have melted, at least Unit 1 was on the way to melting or was already melting before the tsunami even arrived.
Absolutely. I think there's, the problem is that doing an autopsy on how these reactors died, melted, and exploded is complicated by the high radiation fields that continue to prohibit even robots from getting in there for any kind of monitoring or instrumentation. It just all fries when they try to get these things in close. But, Harvey, one of the more startling facts in just the history of this Fukushima fiasco and catastrophe, when Tokyo Electric Power Company originally began the construction of Fukushima Daiichi in the 60s, they bulldozed 80 feet of the natural tsunami wall off the coast. They brought the grade down from where they began the construction, again, by 80 feet in order to accommodate easier, more expeditious movement of machinery into the construction site. They lowered the natural tsunami wall so that they could pump cooling water into those reactors cheaper. And in fact, they used a bogus tsunami risk model that said there would never be a tsunami wave higher than 10 feet at that location. And of course, this defied ancient markers, 1,000 years old, that were all along the coastline saying, don't build beyond here. And all that was, avoided. And then they just did these computer models and they made their dollar, but at the expense of exposing that reactor site to a tsunami that came in at 48 feet. The accident was clearly man-made, even though it was an earthquake, even though a tsunami was created. It was man-made in the fact that there was a collusion of government, regulator, and Tokyo Electric Power Company to put the financial interests of that nation, leading electric utility at the expense of public health and safety and the environment. And that's been the situation far too frequently all around the world, even here in the United States, where the financial interests of the nuclear industry are put ahead of the real safety and environmental issues that come out of this inherently dangerous industry.
Right. So, and Paul, it's a good point you make. I must say, this industry repeatedly complains about too much regulation driving up the cost of reactors. And I was in Japan in the mid-70s, and people were saying, hey, look, you people are building six nuclear reactors right in an earthquake tsunami zone, and now you've bulldozed 80 feet. You've taken 80 feet of protection away, and you're complaining about regulation. I mean, come on. Now, let's jump back, Paul, before we lose track here, because we have tons to talk about. People are very, very concerned about the impacts of Fukushima and whether it's killing the Pacific and what people on the West Coast need to think about. And I want to talk to you about that in great length, because there's a tremendous immediate concern. But also we have the concern of the Ronald Reagan and the sailors on the other ships. Now, you are saying, and I've seen this as well, that the Navy is saying that the Reagan never got within 80 or 90 miles of Fukushima. That's completely at odds with what the sailors are saying. In fact, one of the sailors has said that one of the things the people were doing on the Reagan, these brave young 18, 19, 20-year-old early 20s American citizens, that there were also actually instances of sailors jumping into the water to save people. You don't do that 80 or 90 miles away. And I'm sure I'm not reassured that the Congress is going to give money to the Navy to study this situation. I mean, I think we need an independent study, and I don't know exactly how that's going to happen, but I can tell you right now, and I'm sure you know as well, what the Navy is going to find, which is nothing.
I think it is since we've got the Department of Defense involved here, it's going to be difficult and dubious. But we're always concerned that the information is the first fatality in a nuclear accident. When they can't control the radiation, they control the information. That's been the story from Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and certainly Fukushima. I share your skepticism, but the fact of the matter is we do have a congressional inquiry going right now. Whether or not it's going to be legitimate, or whether it's going to just be more of the trail dusting that we've seen to date, that's a concern. And I think it should continue to drive independent public trusted sources to the to put holes in windows in this wall of to keep us from seeing what's really going on there at Fukushima Daiichi.
Well, let's look at the interests here. I mean, clearly we know that TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power, not only did they not inform the U.S. Navy, they didn't inform the Prime Minister of Japan, for God's sakes, that there had been a meltdown at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 1. But the Navy, and I've published quite a bit on this, and when you publish on the Internet, of course, you get a lot of comments. And people have been telling me, I've had commentators say, that the Navy had to know because it was a nuclear-powered ship, and they must have had radiation monitors on the ship. Now, I don't know exactly what to make of that. Have you heard similar? Do you have any answers on that?
No, we've not seen any information that would give us an idea of what the radiological monitoring would have been deckside. Given they are a nuclear-powered super aircraft carrier, Nimitz-class carrier, for sure they had Geiger counters on board.
Right.
I think, the big concern right now is these 71 plaintiffs who, basically have gone forward to say that not only did they experience the radiation exposure, but now they're having leukemia, thyroid problems, cataracts, and this was all the result of, classic radiation symptoms, nausea, diarrhea, skin rash, all that turned up in their course of duty, and now being put in harm's way, they're suffering the consequences of radiation poisoning.
Right. So in a legal case, now what's happened in the legal case, we have two small law firms in California, one in San Diego and one in the Bay Area, that have taken up this case. They are very articulate. They're very concerned that the case not be politicized, but, they're really not going to get anywhere, I don't believe, politically or in the law, in the courts, unless there's public attention. I do have a petition posted at nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org. You can click on a link there to the petition at Move On. There's another one at richaction.org. And the bottom line is that there will be questions of culpability. Was the Navy responsible? They weren't told about the radiation by TEPCO, but on the other hand, they should have had monitors, we believe they should have had monitors on a nuclear-powered ship that might have told them that. The sailors have said, at least some of them, and there, as you say, there were 71. I think there are going to be more. They had a deadline to file. They were turned down initially in the courts on a jurisdictional issue. They had a deadline to refile by January 6th, I believe, and the attorneys told me that they pushed it back. They got an extension because more sailors had come forward. So I doubt that the final number will be 71. It's going to be higher. But the question is, does the Navy have culpability here? Should the Navy or did the Navy know that there were high levels of radiation coming from Fukushima on this boat, and should it have taken precautionary measures? I've been looking at the documents on the lawsuit, which are very interesting, and I've asked the attorneys to post the lawsuit on the web, but I don't have a URL at the moment. The sailors say that the skipper of the ship pulled out as soon as he got wind, to coin a phrase, of radiation, but that they were there for 4 days. And if they were within a mile or two of Fukushima, downwind they would have been, because the winds blow prevailing out to sea there, then they really, really got drenched. And there's just no way that these people were not completely saturated with lethal doses of the worst kind of radiation. I mean, there's no worse dose of radiation than the mix of what comes out of a nuclear plant. When you say that, Paul, I mean, maybe if a nuclear weapon hits the ground, you'll get a worse dose. But certainly, the stuff that comes out in a meltdown is really hard to beat.
Yeah, and I, as you pointed out, the Navy in those initial days and in the aftermath said that there was no health threat for those Navy personnel that were involved in this humanitarian effort. And, of course, they're saying that their crews, in the worst case radiation exposure, were lower than you would get if you were an airline flight crew crossing the country. But right there should give you a red flag, because airline flight crews, while they may be exposed to cosmic radiation, you know, they're going to get an external dose. But these sailors were clearly inhaling, ingesting radioactive gas and, you know, maybe even particulate. That is a complete, that's an internal exposure, completely different. Where, you know, as you, when you land an airliner, you're done. You're back at, you know, background levels of radiation. But if you ingest, inhale, absorb radioactivity from a nuclear power plant, it's in your bones, it's in your muscle, it goes to your testicles, you begin, it gets in your blood, and it continues to bang away even right down at the DNA level. So the fact that the Navy's sort of blowing this off as a that these guys and service women never got more than a high altitude dose of cosmic radiation, that's a complete red herring just to throw concern off. So I think there's plenty of reason here to investigate, and there should be a lot of public pressure on Congress that we get a legitimate investigation. But right now, if this omnibus bill passes, we would probably see a report back from the Navy as early as April 15th, according to news accounts. So we're going to be following this very, very closely, right along with you.
Well, the question then is the Navy going to come out with evidence from Geiger counters and other devices on the Reagan and on the other ships indicating radiation levels, or are they just talking through their hats like the industry always does? They always drag out you and I have heard this, God, so many times, so like an answering machine. A, they got a dose just the same as flying across country, or B, they got a dose equivalent to living in Denver for a year. I mean, it's the same garbage that we hear all along. So the question now is going to be, does the Navy have direct evidence of the radiation doses on USS Ronald Reagan? Paul, what do you think? I mean, I haven't heard anything.
I think, what we even more, Harvey, are they going to have to decommission the Ronald Reagan? You know, a $5.5 billion aircraft carrier, it's in port now. There should be an investigation, certainly in as far as the desalinization plants that were taking in seawater when that nuclear power plant was that close to Fukushima, which was dumping radioactive accidents from these three reactors into the Pacific Ocean. The Ronald Reagan was taking that water in and desalinating it for cooking, bathing, maintenance, cleaning the internals of that aircraft carrier. So this reactor, might need to go under scrutiny for re-outfitting at least the entire desalinization plant.
Right. Well, they've had 3 years to clean it up and to hide the evidence, that there is evidence. We're going to take a break in a second, but I want to add that, as you know, Paul, the Reagan, after the Japanese denied any possible harm to the sailors on the Reagan, they refused to allow the Reagan to dock in Japan. And it was refused to be docked in South Korea and then in Guam. So, of course, it wound up in San Diego, where nobody really cares if anybody gets harmed. We're talking with Paul Gunter of Beyond Nuclear. We're going to take a short break here. Paul's one of our great experts on nuclear power and radiation, and he and I were cellmates at Seabrook in 1989 and co-organizers of many, many great events in the scheme of nuclear power. When we come back, we're going to talk about what kind of concerns we need to have on a first-person basis about radiation coming to the United States and in the Pacific Ocean. We'll be right back after this. Okay.
refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flood, road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia. It's time to get a better plan. Solartopia is home sweet home to me.
My good buddy, singing to you about the Solartopia. We are coming back to you with Paul Gunter here at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Dana, by the way, can be seen, heard at the Cows with Guns website, one of the great websites. Over 2 million views on that thing. He has written the anthem of the vegetarian movement, Cows with Guns. Absolutely hilarious. If you haven't seen him, make sure you look up. There are a number of different versions on it. Loves Dana dearly and continues to do this all over the country, singing in concerts and at rallies and so on. We're on with the great Paul Gunter. Paul is with Beyond Nuclear. Paul, what's the website people should go to see your stuff?
And it's just beyondnuclear.org, www.beyondnuclear.org.
Yes, and you're a frequent guest on Tom Hartman and other media outlets, which is good for all of us, RT in particular, and not lately on CNN. Have you been on CNN lately?
You know, I was on CNN March 11th, 2011, on Wolf Blitzer's Situation Room, when the reporter asked me, "What's your big concern?" and simply said, I said, "We're afraid that these reactors could blow the roof off." And the next day, that's what happened. And, of course, we were followed by Tony Petranglia, who's with the Nuclear Energy Institute, who said, "That is absolutely impossible. That's not going to happen. We've seen no conditions to suggest that it would even happen." And that's what they say every time.
Every time. And they said for years that there was no melting of fuel at Three Mile Island. And then they sent in a robot camera that finally got in there and said, "Oops, well, looks like the fuel did melt." They've been saying ever since that no one was harmed at Three Mile Island. I happen to know I went there in the central Pennsylvania in 1980 for the worst week of my life, interviewing people who are dying and harmed, and their animals dropping dead in the yard. And Chernobyl, we've seen the same. I think you were too, at a conference in Kiev 10 years after Chernobyl, and now we hear this stream of denial, for God's sakes, about Fukushima. So let's talk about this now. The blogosphere is filled with speculation on the direct impacts of the radiation of Fukushima. We know that massive quantities of radiation have to have escaped in the 3 meltdowns and 4 explosions at Fukushima, these in General Electric design reactors that we've been told for decades could never explode. Nonetheless, we've had 4. We have fuel rods perched in the air at units 1, 2, 3, and 4. We have fuel rods scattered around the site, maybe 11,000, maybe more. We have 300 tons of radioactive water pouring into the ocean every day, and God knows what else. Now,
fuel fragments, an inch long, that were found over a mile away from the Fukushima Daiichi plant. This is in June 28th, 2011 testimony, transcripts from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that they have found fuel fragments that came from the reactor cores more than a mile away from that plant site.
And some of them have been laced with plutonium, which would be from the mixed oxide fuel used in Unit 3, to speed up and, of course, to have this wonderful public relations gambit about taking, you know, plowshares and nuclear weapons and turning them into I got it backwards, didn't I? Taking nuclear weapons, swords, and turning them into plowshares, prophetic, since the nuclear power plants have been probably more destructive in the long term than nuclear weapons, even including Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We've had estimates of upwards of 30 times as much radiation escaping from Fukushima as was released at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, Paul, give us an inventory, if you would, of what we can tangibly say now about the health impacts of Fukushima just about 3 years out. We've talked now about the Ronald Reagan. We have at least 71, probably more, sailors coming forward complaining about devastating. And since I went through this at Three Mile Island and again at Chernobyl, you know, the last things you want to hear are the complaints, the reports of people that have been harmed by radiation. We have to face this. Aside from, in addition to the sailors, what have you heard about tangible health impacts from Fukushima in Japan and even in the United States where the cloud has come?
Well, I think that the most frequent consequence that we're hearing is a significant increase in thyroid problems, particularly in children, but in adults as well. This includes thyroid nodules and cysts and other kinds of maladies. But you know, the radiation, unless you get a substantial dose, you don't necessarily see the impacts, but for several years. But the thyroid nodules are certainly a concern as a precursor for thyroid cancers. You know, we've also seen what looks like these are certainly photos of what looks like beta burns, where beta particles, when they land on you, you get skin rashes, skin sores. We've seen this in animals as well. There's a number of photographs of cattle that have white spots all over their body. When you shave it down, you see that sore, that rash that is turning up on people backs and arms and bodies. And so there's we're seeing a number of precursors that, you know, clearly show that people have been exposed, but given the latency of radiation maladies, and you know, given there is no safe dose, these are all early signs of what we're concerned about later turning into cancers.
All right, so Paul Gunter, continuing to talk with Paul Gunter here from the public Beyond Nuclear organization, beyondnuclear.org. You and I have been together since the days of the Clamshell Alliance. You've gotten taller and I've gotten shorter, but nonetheless, we continue in this work. When did you start with this, Paul?
I originally got started in the fall of 1975. And, you know, it was when we heard about the news from Montague, Massachusetts, where folks like you and Sam Lovejoy had successfully started a campaign to eventually stop the nuclear power plant there in western Massachusetts. And at the same time, they were talking about building two very large pressurized water reactors on the Seabrook, New Hampshire coastline. And a group, you know, with the help of folks from Western Mass and Vermont and Maine and New Hampshire, Connecticut, we all put together the Clamshell Alliance and began this this long, protracted struggle, which started the anti-nuclear movement.
Yes, we did. We jumped in. There was no doubt. We were guided by Dr. John Goffman and by the work of Alice Stewart, who showed that medical x-rays were dangerous. And really, it was her work that made it clear that there's no safe dose of radiation because of the damage, potential damage to embryo, well, tangible damage, actually, that's been done to embryos and the fetus in utero during, and if anybody ever, during medical x-rays, anybody ever tells you that the radiation is detectable but not dangerous, ask them if anybody and that they know who's pregnant gets x-rayed. If it's tangible, if it's detectable, then it's dangerous. That's the bottom line with radiation. So at Fukushima now, you know, people are jumping back and forth. We've had people like Robert Stone, who made this pro-nuclear disinfomercial, Pandora's Promise, saying outright over and over again that no one will be harmed by radiation for Fukushima. It's completely out of Alice in Wonderland. We have, but on the same time, we do have tangible reports from Japan and a report done by Joe Mangano and Dr. Jeanette Sherman here in the United States, indicating clear damage in Japan among to the thyroids of children there, and some kind of damage here in the United States relating to more death statistics. What additional material have you seen about human damage, Paul, that might be of importance here?
Well, I think that, you know, clearly we're concerned about the impact of the reports of hot particles that have been turning up in automobile filters, in car filters, air filters in the northwestern United States. And if the, you know, if there are hot particles that are being evidenced in laboratory analysis in auto air filters, then there is a big concern about those same particles being inhaled. And the consequence of getting a hot radioactive particle in your lungs, you know, again, this is going to take some time to turn up, but you know, obviously there is a lot of academic concern as well. We're seeing studies beginning right now. There's a, for example, there's a Kelp Watch 2014. Where Cal State University Long Beach is starting to take samples of bull kelp and giant kelp from off the coast of California and Washington and Baja in anticipation of a radioactive plume in that's been ocean-borne coming across with the currents. So there's a, you know, there is a monitoring effort that's coming together. We've seen the same kind of monitoring effort, off the coast of Alaska, by the University of Alaska that has, you know, already detected radionuclides in marine biota, at increased levels there, that, again, represents a concern for the bioaccumulation and biomagnification of what was deposited from the atmosphere and fallout and what's being ejected every day into the ocean. And in terms of, you know, hundreds of tons of nuclear waste that's flowing off of these wrecked reactors that have burned through the vessel and, you know, now groundwater, as well as leaking cooling tanks are draining into the Pacific Ocean and into the currents.
Right. And so now there's also considerable discussion about whether this has already impacted the Pacific. I post these articles regularly at nukefree.org, www.nukefree.org. And we've had a report from a sailor, says that the Pacific out from Japan for a couple thousand miles is a dead zone. didn't see anything alive there. We've had starfish, which have deteriorated. We've had some dialogue about that. Some people say that it couldn't possibly be related to radiation. Others argue, dispute that. We've had a disappearance of sardines. Questions about killer whales, salmon run, and the disappearance of sea lion pups, all of which the supporters of nuclear power say vehemently could not be related to Fukushima. The rest of us aren't so sure. What about the Pacific, Paul? What have you been seeing reports from the ocean?
There clearly is increased contamination of bluefin tuna that has been documented by Stanford University and Stony Brook. These aren't anti-nuclear establishments, but they're documenting that the bluefin tuna that spawn off the coast of Japan and then migrate through the northern Pacific to feed have increasing amounts of radioactive cesium-134 and 137. The radioactive cesium-134 is a clear signature from Fukushima Daiichi. No question that the only place that could have come from would be the nuclear accident that's ongoing on the eastern coast of Japan.
Right, and of course, the apologists for nuclear power have just continued to say that this couldn't be part of Fukushima. They're quite adamant, shall we say, dismissive, contemptuous. Of those who are concerned, saying that the amounts of radiation coming out couldn't possibly do any harm. But there's one small detail, Paul, that you and I are quite familiar with, which is they don't know how much radiation is coming out. They have no idea how much radiation has been escaping. And so how can they turn around and tell us that there's no damage?
Well, again, they wouldn't tell us if they knew. There's this Jules Pfeiffer cartoon from 1979 of a nuclear cooling tower with puffs of radioactive clouds, and underneath it says, "They lie." And that's been the story not only from Three Mile Island, but, it wasn't the Soviet Union that reported the Chernobyl accident in April 26, 1986. In fact, it was a nuclear power plant operator in Sweden at the Forsmark nuclear power plant that picked up the radioactive cloud coming from the wreckage 1,000 miles away and reported it. And in the meantime, the Kremlin had withheld information from the May Day parades that were going on in Kiev, just miles from this burning wreckage at Chernobyl. Here again in Japan, they had a radiological modeling system that would look at the accident, look at the wind directions, and look at downwind populations, which was called the SPEEDY model, ironically called SPEEDY, because they never announced it in the days after the Fukushima accident. And as a consequence, there were whole communities that were close to the reactor, worried about their radiation exposure, who migrated. But with the lack of information, this official government information from the Japanese regulatory authorities, they evacuated their people right into the radioactive snow of the Fukushima accident. They camped in it. They boiled the water from the melted snow that was radioactive, and it was because information was being withheld from them. And this is if we learn anything about nuclear accidents and emergency planning, you can plan on the fact that when the emergency happens, they're not going to tell you the truth.
Right, and they're continuing to not tell us the truth. Paul, give us your website. Tell people how to get a hold of you and what they should know about your organization.
www.beyondnuclear.org. We're a community independent anti-nuclear information advocate for communities looking at the hazards of nuclear power and nuclear weapons and looking to mobilize a nuclear-free future.
And you are a frequent guest on Tom Hartman, other major media. What's the final takeaway from all this, Paul?
The final takeaway is that if we want to build our planet and look to a safe energy future, it's better to be active today than radioactive tomorrow.
All right, we like that. We got the smiling sun. Also, Paul, we were successful in keeping shut Seabrook Unit 2. Unit 1 is going, but hopefully not for much longer. We have recently laid the groundwork for shutting Vermont Yankee. 5 reactors shut in 2013, hopefully more in 2014. And the battle against nuclear power continues to succeed in part because of the revolution in renewables, which I'll be happy to talk with you about next time. But we really have our back against it now. With 400 reactors still operating worldwide, they can't shut soon enough as far as I'm concerned. We also have our hands full with the Japan State Secrets Act. Can you very, very quickly comment on that? We're down to our last minute or so. Just give me about 30 seconds on the State Secrets Act, and we'll wrap up.
Again, I think that the collusion of government, regulator, and industry has come up with a plan to seal the information that regards nuclear contamination. And, you know, if you disclose information as a journalist, for example, you run the risk of having the long arm of the industry and its thugs come down on you.
And that would include Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, the very pro-nuclear Prime Minister of Japan now, who wants very badly to reopen the remaining reactors in Japan, upwards of, about 48 of them, actually, all of which are in earthquake zones, many of which are threatened by tsunamis. We've always already had the Kashiwazaki site in Japan that's been harmed by earthquakes. I guess if our species can't learn from Fukushima, then maybe we just don't deserve to be around. But I guess those of us who've been anti-nuclear should at least give us another shot, maybe on another planet. Paul Gunter, thanks so much for being with us. Paul Gunter, beyondnuclear.org, a devastating hour here in Fukushima. Glad to have you back anytime. This has been another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thanks so much to the crew in New York. We're going to let Pete Seeger sign us off here. Next week we'll have more on the Green Power Revolution and all that goes with this. Thank you, everybody, and we will see you soon in Solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.